Welcome to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside Bill Alexander. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I hope you are.
I'm doing great, Bill. I know you you always preach respite on these shows, and you yourself took a little bit of respite.
Yeah, almost too long. I was gone 15 days, and it, you know, after a week, it felt weird. So, you know, it was kind of thing where I enjoyed my time away, but at the same time, it was the kind of thing where I was ready to come back. And I guess that's one that tells you, your respite was a good respite when you've enjoyed it, but you're ready to come back.
Well, I'm not shocked because I know how passionate you are about your work, and you know, it's something that you're always excited to help out your clients. And I know you just had your webinars this past week too, and those are a labor of love for you as well. So
always enjoy doing those, for sure.
I'm not shocked that you were ready to get back to work. And
yeah,
you know, part of that is understanding why those of us are in need of asset protection or estate planning. Your planning in general is so important.
Well, I wanted to focus today on why we should plan. I mean, frankly, because it's the kind of thing where without the why, you know, it makes no difference whatsoever. It's like, why, you know, if you don't really have a why, then it shouldn't matter at all. And I suspect that they're about half of the folks out there don't have a why. And the fact is that about half of folks do not have any kind of estate planning documents. And so that tells me that they don't care. I mean, it's like, okay, I'm going to live my life and do the best I can. And then when I die, whatever happens, happens. And I don't really care about what happens one way or the other. Now, that's not the case for most of us. Most of us care passionately about what we do with our resources that we've created over our lifetime for ourselves and for our families. And so the first thing about why we should plan, it is because the great majority of us, almost all of my clients, their primary concern during their lifetime, in other words, you have to recognize that planning isn't death planning. It is legacy planning. It's life planning. And most of what we do has much more to do with life planning than with death planning. So, but the fact is that most folks, the one of the legitimate reasons for doing good planning is to maintain control of our resources that we've created for ourselves, control for our spouses, remaining the decision maker. And so it's you know, when I say control, it's a matter of being in control of our property, being in control of our decision making during our lifetime, and to the degree that we diminish, our capacity to control diminishes, then we want to be the ones making the decision on who's going to help us, you know, because frankly, that we don't want to leave that up to somebody else, a court or whoever raises their hands to help when we may not have the kind of relationship with the person that should be required. I mean, if we can name the person to take care of things for us, that certainly gives us a better feeling about things. We want to be able to contribute as long as we possibly can. And if we're lucky, we never have to rely on someone else. But that most of us end up in a position at some point where we have to rely on someone else. Now, in the great majority of cases, that's going to be our spouse, but not everybody is lucky to have a spouse or lucky to have a good spouse, if you will, or to have children. Not everyone has children. Not everyone has a sibling that they're close to that they can rely on, those kinds of things. But we certainly want to be in a position to control our situation. And even for my orphan clients, you know, the ones who don't have a spouse, they don't have siblings, they don't have children, they're basically, you know, they have to rely on themselves. Some of my orphan clients, they actually like having a trust agreement, even though they don't have someone to leave their property at their death. Why? So that they can have a disability plan where whoever is going to be in charge of their money when they can't be has fiduciary instructions on how their money must be spent taking care of them. So a disability plan can be an important part of a plan. So yes, it's about staying in control as long as we possibly can. And then being the one who makes the decisions on who's next to help us that we can rely on. And if we have a trust-based plan, then it's a matter of not just giving a person the authority to spend our money, but instructions on what's expected in terms of how they will spend our money on us as the beneficiary of our trust. So all of that can be important. And then we get to the next piece that I think it is, in a lot of ways, it's the most important as it relates to planning for the next generation. And so a lot of it is about what are we going to do for our children, or how are we going to do for our children? And so to me, that is a big part of planning. So quite frankly, in a lot of my client consults, I know that a married couple, their first priority is to take care of each other. But oftentimes I will start out a consultation asking a potential client, tell me about your children. Tell me what they're like, you know, what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What tell me what you want to do for them. Do they work well together? Do they like each other? Do they communicate often? And what's their relationship with you? Sometimes it's wonderful, and sometimes it's not so wonderful. And every family's different, and there's very few families that can say that they don't have some issues that they wish they didn't have. So that's what good planning's all about, is to understand what those issues are and then to plan around them. So oftentimes, planning is really more about the children or grandchildren than it is about other things. And that's obviously something that can be real important.
Family dynamics play a big role in understanding the options available to you when it comes to plans that you may have and things that you want to set in stone. While it's always important to get guidance from an expert, if you haven't spoken with an elder law attorney, as Bill said, there's so many of us out there who don't have any sort of planning or legal documents. If you're falling in that category, schedule some time to speak with someone on the team at WG Alexander & Associates, or if you've had documents drawn up for you in the past, maybe it's been decades since you've ever dusted those off and looked at them, have them reviewed by an elder law attorney. It really goes a long way to make sure that your documents are going to behave in the manner that you expect. And as Bill was discussing, if you want to maintain that control, making sure that you are familiar with your plans in particular really do go a long way. If you want to get a hold of someone on the team at WG Alexander & Associates, you can go to WGALaw.com. If you're interested in attending one of their free webinars, which cover the subjects of long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, as well as asset protection and trust planning, you can also do that at WGALaw.com. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page. It's free to register, free to attend. The next set of webinars are happening on Wednesday, July 10th. Be sure to sign up now. Go to WGALaw.com to learn more. A short break and back. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to learn more about Bill and the whole team at WG Alexander & Associates, as well as their free webinars. If you or a loved one are dealing with a long-term care crisis, the second Wednesday of every month, they provide free webinars, and one of those is dedicated to the subject of long-term care assistance, financial assistance for families who are dealing with a long-term care crisis. Find information about Medicaid and VA benefits. It's highly educational, very, very useful, as there's so much misinformation surrounding these subjects. Go to WGALaw.com, sign up for free to attend the morning webinar, or if you want to learn about asset protection and trust planning, that is covered in the afternoon. Again, both are free to attend. Learn more at WGALaw.com. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander, and Bill, we are having a discussion about why we should plan and everything that goes into that thought process.
Well, you know, the good news is for those of us who are married, in North Carolina, there is no death tax upon the death of the first spouse to die. And so that is a really important concept. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter if you're a multimillionaire or a billionaire. Upon the first death, if the property goes to your spouse, there is no death tax whatsoever in North Carolina. Now, in other words, there's no federal death tax and there's no state death tax in North Carolina. Now, quite frankly, there are states that do have an inheritance tax or an estate tax, in essence, a death tax, when a person, when a spouse dies, but not North Carolina, and that's good. Now, has it always been that way? No. You know, back in the dark ages when I started practicing law, there was a death tax in North Carolina when the first spouse died. But that went away a long, long time ago. But it's also a trap that a lot of folks don't understand. And why is it a trap? It's a trap because if you, and now there's no death tax, and it doesn't matter what kind of planning you have for your spouse. So it doesn't matter if there's a trust or if there's just a sweetheart will, everything to my spouse, or there's no planning at all. If everything goes to your spouse, then there's no tax. And it doesn't matter how big the estate is. However, the issue is that if you have not used your personal exemption for estate tax, then see, the government's real tricky here. So let's move to 2025 when the, or I should say till 2026, when the exemptions come back down. And so, yes, we do have some large exemptions. So you have to be pretty darn wealthy to even worry about death tax. But let's say that you have $8 or $9 million estate, and you've left everything to your spouse, and your spouse hasn't done any kind of planning other than to enjoy the inheritance, and you have some children. So what that basically means is, because when the second spouse dies and you haven't done anything, then you've lost the exemption of the first spouse. And so the surviving spouse only has his or her exemption left. And in this case, the exemption might be $7 million, but you have a $9 million estate at the second death. So there's $2 million over and above the exemption that's taxable. And normally, while the tax rate can change, the tax rate is normally 50% or more. And so, in essence, what it boils down to is, because you didn't do anything, you didn't do any planning, your kids have $1 million of tax to pay 9 months from the date of your death. So what I'm getting at is, even though it's a nice thought, no death tax at the first spouse's death, it's also a trap that families can fall into if they have a large estate and the exemption is, the spouse's one exemption is not enough to cover what goes to the children. So that can be a pretty important concept for those that have nice wealth involved. Now, what about children? You know, children are special, and planning is really important. And this is true whether your children are young or whether they're adults and married and you have grandchildren. So it's a matter of, let's talk about young children first. And the fact is that parents of young children should have planning in place just in case something really bad happens. And it's like this. If one parent dies, you know, hopefully there's enough money and there's been planning for life insurance and things like that. But what if both parents die at leaving young children? Well, who starts making decisions for these young children at that point? And what it boils down to is, if there's no plan in place, no last will and testament recommending a guardian, then typically other family members or other people have to come forward to basically volunteer to be the guardian. And so, you know, that's on the parents for not having done the planning that they should have. But what about, now the guardian is the one who's responsible for taking the children in. But what about the money? What happens to that? Well, if there's no planning in place, then the guardianship will include authority over the money. It's also very expensive, because the guardianship will require bonding for the guardian. It will require annual accounts of everything that comes in and goes out of the account. Puts a lot of responsibility on the guardian for appropriate investments and spending, and reporting all of that to the clerk superior court each year, that where the accounting must be approved, and of course paying for the bond for this as well, plus keeping up any real estate and things that's not sold and the like. Well, the fact is, the bad news, for at least what most of us would consider bad news, is the fact that with no plan in place, when the child turns 18, guess what? They're an adult. And the guardianship goes away. And where does the money go? Right straight into the pockets of the 18-year-old. And I don't know any 18-year-olds who's responsible enough to actually manage a large inheritance and the like. So obviously that is a huge negative. So the better situation would be if the parents, either through a revocable trust or through a will-based plan, creates a trust for their children. And then the parents can do a lot of things that a guardianship would just simply not authorize. Now, yes, you still need a guardian for young children, but it would be more of a guardian of the person to take the children in and care for them, but they would not necessarily be responsible for the children's inheritance and their money and how it's invested and how it's used for their benefit or for how long. Because with a trust agreement, obviously, most of us would not want our children to get their paws on any substantial money until they had finished school and were mature enough. And for most people, most of us believe that age of maturity, and sometimes it depends on whether they're male or female, that it normally comes somewhere between the ages of 25 and 30, but certainly not 18 or even 21 for that matter. So you can do that with a trust agreement in your will or a trust agreement in a revocable trust as well. But those are the kind of things that parents should do when their children are young, just in case something awful happens to the parents together. There are a couple different ways of taking care of a trust for young children, and when we come back, I want to mention that because I think it's important.
Yeah, I think that'll be a topic of interest for a lot of people, and understanding that taking care of our planning is critical because, you know, there are situations where you could have unintended consequences if you don't have this control that we're talking about in place, and you've put that thought into your planning and answered those why questions that we are posing today. If you would like to get a hold of WG Alexander and Associates and schedule some time to speak with an elder law attorney, you can do that by going to WGALaw.com, WGALaw.com, or call 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000 at WGALaw.com. You can also register for the free webinars that are happening on Wednesday, July 10th. They do these the second Wednesday of every month. And if you are interested in learning more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, or learning more about asset protection and trust planning, this is a wonderful free opportunity for you to do just that. Go to WGALaw.com, click on the seminars button to learn more. A quick break and back, you are listening to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Are listening to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to find information about Bill and the whole team at WG Alexander and Associates. If you're interested in scheduling some time to speak with an elder law attorney or want to learn more about their free webinars, WGALaw.com is the place to go. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander today. We are talking about why we should plan and the importance surrounding that, and we've discussed maintaining control. And Bill, just before the break, we were discussing, you know, what things we should have in mind when it comes to our planning when we have young children.
Absolutely. And this can be young children or it can be grandchildren, you know, that are young. But there's a choice. And if you have more than one child, obviously, if you only have one child, then all of the money would go for that one child. And then you can set out, you know, what your guidance is for the trustee and what your hopes and dreams are for that child. And if there are limitations, you can set that out in a trust agreement as well. If you have more than one young child, in almost every case, will recommend what we call a common trust or a common pot trust, if you will. And as opposed to, so think of it this way. Let's say that you have an estate of, let's just say, $800,000 and you have two children. Well, what some folks would do, and I don't like this, is they would just evenly divide the money. So you have a trust for one child for $400,000 and you have a trust for the other child for $400,000. But if you think about it for very long, you realize that that type of distribution is totally unfair. And you say, well, why might that be? And see, I like a trust that's closer to what I would call a parental trust. What would the parents do? And so how do you do that? Well, you know, as parents, we don't generally, while we try to keep things equitable and fair for each of our children, we also recognize that the needs of each child are different. And what happens to them are different as well. And we don't split out our money based on how many children we have. We have one pot of money. And that is the way a trust should be for young children as well. Just think of it this way. Let's say you have a child who's 10 years old and another child that's 5 years old. Well, in essence, that older child is going to have eaten up more of your resources if you were to die at any particular point. And for instance, if you have a trust that hopefully lasts until both children get through school and those kinds of things, then guess what? The older child might already be through college when the younger child is simply getting close to graduation for high school. So you've already spent a couple $100,000 potentially for the older child for their tuition and living expenses in school. And so would that be fair to the younger child if the younger child doesn't have the same opportunity to get through school? And of course, our children can be very different as well. One might not want to go to college, and another one ends up going to a very expensive school. Well, again, for us as parents, normally it's a matter of giving them equal opportunities, not necessarily giving them equal money. You know, if we have one child who goes to Harvard and it costs $80,000 a year, and we have another, and I mean, actually, if you could afford that, and another child that goes to Wake Tech for a different type of degree. And so, you know, for one child, you've spent, you know, $300,000 to $400,000 for their education. And for the other child, you've spent $3,000 or $4,000. Well, we don't write a check to our child who went to Wake Tech for the difference. I mean, wouldn't that be a little silly? So, but the fact is that we've given them the same opportunities. One took advantage of it, and hopefully both took advantage of it, but in different ways. And so, or let's say that one child gets sick and needs care that's uninsured, and we've spent, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, we're not going to write a check to our healthy child to make up for that differential. And that's why, I mean, if you think about it, that's why a common trust where all your money's kept together for the benefit of your children until the youngest child reaches an age where you want it otherwise, you know, and for a lot of folks, that's 25 or 28 or 30, and for some folks, it's even 35. But the fact is that it's something that we can control in a trust agreement, depending on, for a lot of folks, historically, what we want to do education-wise for our children. And then we divide the property once the children are at the magic age that we've decided it should be distributed. And we also provide for special allocations where in the event that we have certain things that we say, okay, if you want that, then the trustee can give you that within a reasonable amount of money, but it's going to come out of your share when the property is divided. And for a lot of folks, that might be a motor vehicle, you know, because oftentimes, and the reason I like it to be a special allocation for a vehicle is because some kids are more than happy riding around in a clunker and they're good with that, while another kid wouldn't be seeing, they'd die before they would be in a clunker. And so they're willing to spend some of their trust money on a nicer car, if you will. But, other things like that might be to help a child with their with a wedding, you know, the reasonable cost of a first wedding or potentially a down payment on a house. So, in other words, one child may have gone through these things where the other child has not. And it's not necessarily the older child. It could be either. But that would come out of their share when the property is divided. And so those are the kinds of things that you can do with a well-drafted trust agreement. And when we're talking about young children, we almost always do those in a will-based trust. And of course, the hope is that they'll never see a nickel of it because you're going to outlive those issues and you'll never have those problems. But having a trust just in case is smart planning. Now, the next thing we need to talk about is, okay, what happens when our children turn 18? So let's talk about that next.
Well, I think you've given us some real food for thought because, I think most people do kind of default to, well, I've got two kids, I'll split this right down the middle. But again, that aspect of control and making sure that you're putting some real thought into your planning, that's why we've got the experts here at WG Alexander & Associates and why you should speak with them with regard to your planning. Go to WGALaw.com to schedule some time to speak with an elder law attorney, or you can call the office 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. A short break and back, you are listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to find information about the WG Alexander & Associates free webinars happening on Wednesday, July 10th. They do these the second Wednesday of every month, covering the subjects of long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, important financial information for families dealing with a long-term care crisis. They also have a webinar dedicated to asset protection and trust planning. Both are free to attend. You can do this from the comfort of your own home. All you need is a device with internet access and an email address, and you need to register in advance by going to WGALaw.com. That's it. No costs associated with this, just a wonderful educational opportunity for you to learn more. WGALaw.com. Click on that seminars button at the top of the page to learn more. Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. We are talking about why we should plan and the importance of that and keeping control. And Bill, we've been discussing how children, young children, play a role into our planning, but what happens when those children are not so young?
Well, the fact is hopefully everything goes well and our children turn 18. So what happens when a child turns 18? Well, the fact is that whether they can go drinking or not is one question for them. But the fact is that even it doesn't matter whether they're still living in your home or not, because more than likely they're right there and they may be there for a long time. But when a child turns 18, they're considered an adult. They're no longer a child. And so one of the things that parents often forget is the fact that when a child turns 18, the parent has lost control. They're no longer the natural guardian of that person because the person's no longer a child. Okay, so what you have a 19-year-old that's in a automobile accident, and who can make decisions for that child of care? Well, the fact is, yes, there is a secondary protocol in the hospital, so maybe you can make some decisions, but certainly not to the degree that you could when they were 17 or 16 or 12. The fact is that when a child turns 18, it is a smart thing to do for parents to have their children sign, at a minimum, a healthcare power of attorney appointing their parents as a decision maker in case that it's necessary. Now, when my children turned 18, I had them sign not only a healthcare power of attorney, but a general durable power of attorney at the same time. Now, these documents for children who are turning 18 do not need to be complicated documents at all, but to have a basic healthcare power of attorney, and I like to have a general durable power of attorney as well, that gives you the ability to make decisions if it's required. Now, you keep your fingers crossed that you'll never need it, but the fact is that children in that age category, 18 to 25, that's a pretty high-risk category. You know, they do stupid things, and they get in trouble, and they get in car wrecks, and they're generally not great drivers, and, you know, or they're in vehicles with their friends who are not great drivers, you know, those kinds of things. So the fact is that for parents, it's a tumultuous time, and having the right documents in place is just smart on the part of the parents. Now, let's get past that. All right, our kids are grown. Life is wonderful. They've gone through. They've gotten their educations. They're married. They're, you know, we're hoping for grandchildren, or maybe we've got some grandchildren. Then how does that fit into our plan? They're still the important part of our planning. And so part of our planning process is, do we have a smaller estate where when we die, we want our children to have everything outright? Or do we want to put in a certain age before, because for a lot of folks, we want to make sure that our children are mature enough to not get taken advantage of and to be able to wisely use the money that they receive from us. So for a lot of us, we don't want our children to have full control of an inheritance before they turn 30 or so. But that's one decision that we have to make as parents is, okay, when do we want to give our children control over whatever inheritance that they might have? Now, for wealthier families, this becomes an even bigger issue because oftentimes, and quite frankly, the great majority of my clients want their children to have asset protection when they inherit the property. And so the great majority of my clients actually create a lifetime trust for their children that gives them asset protection. Jason, do you know the one issue that drives a lot of parents, particularly those of wealth, to create an asset protection trust for their children? Do you know what that one issue is?
Maybe the prospect of divorce?
That's exactly it. You hit it right on the spot. The fact is that all of us worry about whether our children will be in a good lifetime marriage or be unfortunate to have to deal with divorce. But the fact is that none of us want our children to lose their inheritance in a divorce. Now, the fact is that a good family lawyer will tell you that an inheritance is not marital property. However, it's very difficult when you have an inheritance not to share it with your spouse because you don't know you're heading for a divorce. But when it's in an irrevocable asset protection trust, it's going to be protected from divorce, and that means an awful lot. Now, there are a lot of other considerations there, too, as to what we do for our kids, depending on whether they're what their needs are. But it just gives you a glimpse of some of the things that we want to think about in planning.
That's right. This is just a glimpse, and that's why you really do need to spend some time thinking about your planning, and if the guidance of an elder law attorney would be beneficial to you, reach out to the team at WG Alexander & Associates. Go to WGALaw.com to schedule some time to sit down with a professional and get your plans in order. It's a good idea. Go to WGALaw.com or call 919-256-7000. Quick break and back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be back after this. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Go to WGALaw.com. Be sure to register for next month's seminars if you are interested in the subjects of long-term care assistance or asset protection and trust planning. These are just a wonderful free opportunity for you to learn more from the team at WG Alexander and Associates. Go to WGALaw.com. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page to register for free to attend on Wednesday, July 10th, or you can call the office. The phone number is 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. That's going to do it for us today. On behalf of Bill Alexander, thank you so much for listening. We hope you will do it again next week. This has been Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Have a wonderful day.